Welcome to another edition of podcast by the American Bankruptcy Institute. I'm Sam Giordano, ABI's Executive Director. Our special guest today is Congressman Ed Perlmutter, a new member of the 110th Congress from Colorado. He also happens to be an ABI member, and we're very proud of Ed for that as well. Congratulations, Congressman, on your election
last November.
And welcome to ABI Podcast.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and I'm glad I get to kind of visit with my brothers and sisters in the bankruptcy bar about what's happening here in Washington and how I got here.
Great. Well, let's talk about that. How did you get involved in politics? I know you had a background of elective office in the state Senate. Why don't you explain a little bit about that?
Well, it started a long time ago. My dad and his business partner were the two precinct committee men for the Democratic Party where we lived in Wheat Ridge, Colorado. And on weekends, we'd go out and help them pass out literature. And it was always a pleasant experience because each day ended with a milkshake. So I always had positive thoughts about it. And then, in college, I stayed involved in politics. I worked in a couple campaigns. And then after law school, I also acted as counsel for a couple campaigns and a couple congressional campaigns, and then sort of, you know, focused on the practice of law for about the next 10 or 15 years. But I continued to have kind of the itch. I love public policy. I like politics. And I decided to run for the Colorado State Senate back in 1994. And I was one of very few Democrats, new state senators who were Democrats, to be elected in 1994. And, the rest is history. I served for 8 years in our Colorado State Senate. I was on the Judiciary Committee, the Finance Committee, a whole bunch of committees. The last 2 years I was in leadership. Democrats had not held the Colorado Senate since John Kennedy
was
president. And so the last 2 years I was president pro tem of the Senate. And then I hit a term limit and backed away from politics for the last few years, and then decided to run again in 2005.
And what factors went into your decision to try to jump back into national elective office, if you will?
I mean, there was just the policy piece, and then there was a personal piece. One of our daughters, we have three girls, and our middle daughter had graduated from high school, and I just felt that on a personal level, I could attempt for a national office. And on a policy level, I just felt the country was going in the wrong direction for a whole bunch of reasons, you know, whether it was Iraq or health care or the budget being upside down, and I felt like it was time for me to try to make a difference there.
And this seat, as it turns out, ended up being was an open seat. So that was that a factor in your decision as well?
No, I decided to run even before the seat came open. The guy, the Republican who held the seat, Bob Beaupre, decided to run for governor. So it came open. But my decision really was before that. I felt that there really needed to be some checks and balances back in our federal government, and I just didn't see it. And although I like Bob Beaupre very much, you know, on a personal level, I felt that, you know, his voting completely with the administration all the time just wasn't good for the suburbs of Denver, which I represent, or for the nation.
And so you decided to run, and you had a contested primary?
I had a contested primary. When you step out of politics, and I'd stepped out of it, my term in the Senate was up at the end of 2002, beginning of 2003. So I stepped out for about 3 years, and, you know, I did dad things, like I coached the softball team. I continued to practice law with my firm, Berenbaum Weinshank, that I'd been there for 25 years. But by not being in politics, other people decided that they'd run for the seat as well. And so, yeah, I had a hotly contested primary.
But obviously survived that, and then won in the general election. What was the general election like? Was it a tight race? Did you have outside influences going on, sure. or was it mostly local issues?
Oh, no. Let's sort of start with the primary. And I just, you know, I've developed a lot of good friendships with members of the bankruptcy bar, you know, over, you know, these years, these
sure.
many years. And
sure.
had a lot of help from my colleagues in the practice of law. And they helped me both in the primary as well as in the general. And I just can't thank them enough for being willing to invest in me. So that's number one. Number two, in the general, this was seen as one of the bellwether races in the country because the 7th Congressional District, which are the suburbs of Denver, are evenly split, one-third Democrat, one-third Republican, one-third unaffiliated. And so it was seen as a real bellwether for the nation. You know, was the district going to remain Republican or was it going to switch to a Democratic seat? And so there were all sorts of influences, both from the Democratic side as well as the Republican side. And, you know, it was a heavy race, you know, from I had a number of folks come into town from Bill Clinton to Barack Obama to, you know, a whole variety. I had Stephen Stills and Burt Bacharach. So I had, you know, a whole variety of folks on the other side. He had a number of fundraisers. He had President Bush came in early on. So it was a slugfest.
So you had all the heavy hitters.
You bet, because this was seen as a key race. And as it turned out, I won by a pretty substantial margin, which surprised a lot of folks. It didn't surprise me. I had just a great organization, you know, and I have deep roots in the Denver community, and it all came together. And people wanted a change.
Right.
Across this country, they wanted a change.
Right, right. And you're part of
obviously
a historic class coming in after 12 years of Republicans being in control of the House. So you're part of a very famous group, obviously. You mentioned your bankruptcy practice a couple of times, and we should talk about that. Obviously, much of our audience are going to be members who are in the practice. Talk a little bit about your firm and the nature of your bankruptcy work in Denver.
Sure. When I first came out of law school, the bankruptcy code had just changed. I was low man on the totem pole, and I was told that I needed to take extra classes and learn about the changes to the bankruptcy law, and I did. And so, you know, both on a consumer level as well as commercial and, you know, business-type bankruptcies, I started those back in the early 80s, oil and gas bankruptcies, the whole gamut. And basically, my firm was a business firm, represent a lot of banks and credit unions and real estate developers, and my bankruptcy business turned into one where I represent, business debtors from time to time, but generally representing lenders, trustees, creditors committees. And then oftentimes we did some consumer bankruptcies, but from the creditor position.
Okay. And when you decided to run for Congress, obviously your partners and even clients, were they supportive of your decision? Or what issues did that cause?
It depends which partner you're asking about or which client. The clients were all pretty supportive. A couple, I've represented for a very long time, but they were very supportive, Republicans and Democrats all supporting me. My partners were generally very supportive. I think they looked forward to me leaving the political arena and really being, you know, I'd been sort of a key person within our firm for a long time and brought in a lot of business and tried a lot of cases. And I think a couple of them were disappointed that I wasn't going to continue to do that, that my, you know, my real path was sort of on the political side. And so, you know, but everybody, you know, gave me a fairly well and supported me financially. They walked precincts for me. They helped me in a whole variety of ways. So, you know, my partners were very, very, very supportive. Some of them, though, I think wished I would have just stayed as a lawyer.
Well, how about your transition to Washington life while you'd been in state government? Obviously, the federal system is different, and there is, I would imagine, some sort of culture shock, at least, moving from the suburbs of Denver here to Washington this week, for example. We're taping this while we're experiencing a bit of a snow event, as we say here inside the Beltway. What's the transition been like?
The transition, the best way for me to describe it is it's like going back to college. It's like going to college. There's this excitement that you feel as you graduate from high school and you're going to college, you're going away from home. It's a lot of very new things. Here, with housing prices the way they are, you know, I looked at little apartments and realized that I was going to be paying a lot more for those and getting a lot less than I got my first year or my second year of college back in Boulder, Colorado. And I ended up getting a roommate. We got a great place. We've been to orientations. You know, I've gotten lost on the Capitol campus I don't know how many times. And the amount and the level of information you get is just really beyond anything that I imagined. And, you know, I'll give you just the last 3 hours. I was on the floor of the House where a debate concerning Iraq and the escalation of troops is taking place. And I was preparing my speech, which I'll deliver tomorrow night, but I wanted to listen to what some of the folks were saying. I came from there to a meeting that I had with one of our local universities, and then from that I went to a committee hearing on Homeland Security, the Intelligence Subcommittee, and we've had a number of briefings from the Intelligence Division of Homeland Security, sort of in an informal sense, where we go in and it's very classified and all of that stuff. You can't really release any information, but today we had a more formal hearing, and at the end of the hearing, I ended up chairing the committee, which was a surprise to me because a number of people left, and I ended up chairing the committee. Right. And then I moved from that to back here. A woman came in and wanted to talk about research money for epilepsy, and that's just in the last 2.5 hours.
Right. It's a whirlwind.
It is. It's a whirlwind, and it's a whirlwind about subjects that are very important, very broad. They touch a lot of people, or maybe epilepsy, not so many, but these other things touch a lot of people. You want to do your best, and you just, you know, dive in.
Right. You have many constituencies, many demands on your time. You're very gracious to spend some time with us today, for example. And there are many challenges. I worked for a senator for many years, and the energy that's required, the focus that's required, the ability to immediately shift on a dime between issues that are very important is really astounding. And in the House, at least, you don't have very much help. Tell us about your staff support and the like. I mean, how many people are on your D.C. staff and then back in Colorado to help you?
I have six staff here in Washington and eight in Lakewood, Colorado. So, and I feel good. These are a number of the folks work with me on the campaign. My chief of staff was our chief of staff in the state Senate. She was then my campaign manager, and now is my chief of staff overall for my congressional operation. The only trouble is she had a baby yesterday, and she'll be out of commission for a couple months. But other than that, I think I really have a good staff. Everybody is busy as all get out, especially with the internet and email. We get thousands of letters
right.
on a whole variety of subjects, and try to, you know, we don't respond to kind of an email chain letter one at a time. We'll sort of respond to them in bulk. But there is a lot of work going on, and I just want to say Nancy Pelosi, as the new Speaker of the House of Representatives, is a woman who is all about getting business done. She has been working us at a level. I mean, I worked hard in my law practice. I worked hard in the state Senate. I've never worked this hard in my life, and it's because there are some real goals to make a difference in people's lives. And we got that 6 for 06 done in the first 100 hours. Then we had to deal with budget issues that were left over from the prior Congress. They didn't finish the budget, didn't finish appropriations. We took care of that. And now we're working on issues pertaining to Iraq that have not been discussed and not been debated in the last 4 years that we've been over there. So
right.
It's a very active time and a lot of big issues facing the country. And
would you say the level of activity and the pace and the volume of things that you have to deal with is that, would you say, the biggest surprise that you've experienced so far, or is there something else?
I think I expected the volume and the pace, but not so quick. You know, I thought maybe I would sort of ramp up into it, but I mean, it just hit immediately.
There's no junior associates here. Everybody's a partner.
Yep, exactly. Well, it just happened very quickly, and I think for somebody who's new, who's still trying to figure out where all the bathrooms are and mm-hmm. the tunnels are, you know, it was a little more daunting than I anticipated. You know, my goal, and I stayed just very focused on this, was 7 o'clock p.m. on November 7th. You know, do the best I could as a candidate, mm-hmm. have the best organization. And I didn't really look, I didn't want to jinx it. You know, I didn't want to look past that.
Right.
And boom, then I won. And, you know, I had ideas and obviously policies and things I wanted to get done. But I really hadn't thought about the day-to-day affairs here, the day-to-day business, the procedures and things like that. And a lot of that's been a real eye-opener for me.
It does become more manageable, obviously, like anything else, and you've got a great team to help you, obviously, and that's critical. People are policy here in Washington. That's what they say, and that's probably still true. You mentioned, obviously, the war resolution this week. What are some of the other big issues that you think you're facing here in the 110th Congress?
Well, the two major issues are going to be energy issues and healthcare issues. And high priority for my caucus is energy independence, or, you know, the way I describe it, you know, developing and building on renewable and alternative sources of energy, because it's good for national security, good for the climate, good for jobs. So there will be a lot of impetus, a lot of effort in that arena. I'm on the Financial Services Committee, which I'm on two subcommittees, capital markets, which are the insurance companies and stock exchanges, and also the financial institution, which is the banking committee. And I hope to propose something, you know, green mortgages, where if a home or a commercial building meets certain energy efficiency standards, that there be some, you know, knock a quarter point off, knock a half a point off, something to encourage people to have energy efficient homes and buildings. So, you know, that'll be one. Healthcare is clearly something that's on everybody's mind. And, you know, looking at different kinds of approaches that some of the states have suggested, Medicare is a, you know, a big part of the budget, and unless something's done, it's going to be, you know, really hitting the wall in terms of solvency in about 10 years, long before there's any issues with respect to Social Security. Medicare is the big one that we have to take a look at, and I hope to bring some of the skills that I learned, you know, as a lawyer in the bankruptcy arena or representing businesses, you know, doing financial kinds of things to bear on some of these questions.
Terrific. Well, good luck with those issues. I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about bankruptcy law.
Sure.
as a policy issue. Obviously, the last Congress, after many years, probably about 8 years in the making, finally enacted and the President signed into law the Bankruptcy Act of 2005.
Right.
It's very controversial, certainly among our members. Among all practitioners and judges and the like. Do you have any sense, A, of from your partners perhaps, how the law is working back in Colorado at least, or is there any possibility or likelihood that the law might be amended or changed? I know you're not on the Judiciary Committee, for
right.
example, but are your colleagues talking about it? Is bankruptcy still on the radar screen?
I think bankruptcy is on the radar screen precisely when we can put it on the table to, you know, adjust it, amend it, whatever. I don't know. And quite frankly, I'd like to look to your organization, my organization, because I'm a member, for some guidance on it. You know, when it came down, I was not particularly crazy about it, and probably, you know, would not have supported it. You know, there are obviously some parts that seem to be working, but I need help where things aren't working, that we refine it and make it better. Because, you know, there is this myth among some people that people file, you know, personal bankruptcies for fun. And that was never been my experience, and I've generally been representing the creditor side of this, that it's not something you do except as a last resort, and, you know, when you're, you know, there is no alternative. And just before the new provisions went into effect, I was on something called Lawline 9, which is our NBC affiliate in the Denver area. And they were taking phone calls. All of the consumer bankruptcy lawyers were engaged. I mean, they were filing, you know, things like crazy. So the TV station asked for anybody who knew anything about bankruptcy to come get on the phones with all these people that were calling into them. And, you know, without, you know, an exception, and the phone never stopped ringing, and it generally was a single woman who you could hear the kids in the background. There was, you know, some kind of health issue or something else like that that resulted in them just, you know, facing the financial wall. And, you know, people, life's tough enough that we didn't need to make it tougher. And that was my feeling. And these phone calls just reconfirmed that.
I note that you are on the House Financial Services Committee and a couple of subcommittees that are going to be definitely looking at issues that are important to the bankruptcy world, and where your expertise and work as a bankruptcy practitioner will be very valuable. One, in terms of the Capital Markets Subcommittee, which could have jurisdiction over things like hedge funds and the like, which are so important to a lot of the commercial bankruptcy cases and financing of commercial cases, and then the Financial Institutions and Consumer Credit Subcommittee, which is going to be looking at a lot of consumer credit industry practices, which
right.
many people believe are a predicate to rising consumer bankruptcies that we saw in the run-up to the new law. How do you see the work of that subcommittee shaping up?
I think both of those committees are going to have their plates full. We had our first full committee hearing and a markup or an amending of a particular three bills yesterday. The bills all passed, but there were a lot of skirmishes between the Republican side and the Democratic side. And one was the Foreign Investment in U.S. Assets bill, CFIUS, they call it. And that one passed. I think business and the banking community will be, you know, pretty happy with that particular version of the bill as it comes out, and a couple other things. But we're going to take a good look at some lending practices and things like that. And, you know, my background, my firm represent a lot of mortgage banks, lots of lenders. And, you know, so I come at it with kind of a business perspective, but you know, there have been a lot of foreclosures, and, you know, the real question is why? Were there some practices that really were designed to hurt people or not? Or was it just something that's occurred within any economy? So we'll just have to look at those things.
All right. Well, we very much look forward to working with you, you know, on those issues, because I think that is going to be one of the congressional committees that will see a lot of action that will affect as I said, bankruptcy-related, you know, issues. This Congress, we very much hope to help you and the committee in that regard. You mentioned Senator Obama.
don't you dare! You're gonna try to pin me down on this. Okay,
I'm not.
Go ahead.
But you did anticipate my question. Let me ask you generically then. How do you see the 2000 presidential year shaping up? It's started already, which is a little bit sooner than normal. But
and I agree with you. I think somebody somehow you know, jumped the gun, and then everybody felt like they had to really just get going. And I felt like a number of folks were jumping in before they had really laid the groundwork, you know, and really gotten their little speeches and their organizations together. And there have been some missteps as a result of it. But I think both sides of the aisle, a lot of talent. You know, obviously I'm focusing my attention on the Democratic side, but Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Richardson, Biden, you know, Vilsack, all of these guys that are just, you know, Evan Bay, just outstanding people. I'm happy that we have so much talent that, you know, John Edwards, you know, all of these guys. I'm happy to be a Democrat, and I'm happy that they've all decided to go for the presidential election. You know, just running for congressional seat, 650,000 people, it took every fiber of my body to do it. For someone to run for the presidency, they've got to be superhuman. I mean, that's just, I don't care what side of the aisle. For them to be able to maintain the pace and just know all of the different things that you've got to know is really remarkable.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Well, Congressman, we've covered a lot of topics. You've been extraordinarily gracious with your time, and we very much appreciate it. We do look forward to helping you and the committee as you consider policy issues in the 110th Congress. We wish you continued success, and hope you'll keep in touch with us. As a now member of Congress, you qualify for the government member ABI rate, which is
good.
So you get a price break, which we're happy to provide. And again, thank you very much for joining us today on ABI Podcast.
Sam, thank you very much, and please, you know, I will be looking to you all for help on a number of these financial issues. So.
Our pleasure. And with that, this is ABI Executive Director Sam Giordano saying goodbye for ABI Podcast. See you.